What is this? A movie for ants?
And a wasp. Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Bell, man, how you doing tonight?
I am doing a fantastamundo.
Good, man. Glad to hear it. I am doing well as well, Bell.
So, Bell, I hear you're doing well.
Yeah. No, I'm doing very well as well. I'm actually down on the coast here in Mississippi. I'm in Biloxi, if you can believe it. Yeah, I'm down here for a conference. One of my clients, I'm down here collecting audio for their show and having a good time. But I've got the whole setup here in the hotel room, and hopefully, if the internet holds true, we will be able to bring this episode to you. Of course, I'm talking about an episode of the most unnecessary show on the internet. That's right, it's two guys talking about movies, talking about comic books, talking about comic book movies. And this week is no exception. In fact, this week it is back to the basics, the purest form of Panel to Screen, because we are talking about a comic book movie sequel, introductory, whatever you want to call it, Ant-Man and the Wasp. And before we jump into it, let's just go ahead and put it out there. Spoilers, 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 spoiler, spoilers, spoiler, spoilers.
Spoilers!
Here there be spoilers, and ye been warned. Bell, Ant-Man and the Wasp. So let's take them back to when the Ant-Man movie was first out. This was at a time just shy of Age of Ultron, but not quite Captain America: Civil War. It was, the creation of that movie, it's well chronicled and everything else. You and I saw this movie. We discussed it on this podcast, on Panel to Screen, and shared our thoughts. You, a bit more positive than me. You really loved it. I was not as, warm to it, but at the same time did not dislike it. And also, most of the things that you didn't like, I liked. You know, par for the course with Panel to Screen.
More or less, right?
Here we are now with the sequel, Ant-Man and the Wasp. And where were you going into this movie?
So, as you stated, I did really like the first one. I'm a big fan of Edgar Wright. And even though he didn't end up directing it, there was a lot of Edgar Wright in the final product, and so I appreciated that. And but I really liked the first one. So going into this one, I was really excited because of how much I liked the first one, and I was thinking that it was I was very positive. I was very positive going in.
I too was positive. One thing that I found interesting is that yet again we're going into a Ant-Man movie in the midst of a lot of like really big climactic stuff. Ant-Man was the final film of Marvel Phase 2, even though it came after the Avengers movie. So it seemed almost like a tacked on type of experience. Ant-Man and the Wasp is the first and at this point only MCU film to appear after the events of Infinity War.
We need to clarify that.
Okay.
Now, chronologically, as far as the time here on, not Earth 616, whatever Earth, our Earth is.
Right, yeah.
The meat space.
the MCU. MCU.
It takes place after Infinity War, but the movie itself takes place before it.
Okay. All right, no, you're right. And it's very clear exactly when the snap occurs. Bell, self-contained episode definitely kind of lowers the stakes of what's come before. What did you think of Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a great job. I thought it kind of captured a little bit of the flair of the first one. It wasn't exactly like an Edgar Wright film. He has a very specific style. But I think the writing team, I know Paul Rudd was a part of the writing team. I think they did a good job kind of capturing that. And the beats and the jokes, I think, were there. Sometimes they're a little too much, but we'll get into that. But overall, I was very impressed, and I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, for me, man, this is definitely, I see this movie as a definite improvement from what came before. Again, not hating on what came before, but I was meh. I think I even called it Ant-Meh in the first one. Yeah. And I was very much prepared to go into this movie calling this one Ant-Meh and the wah-wah, that it wasn't going to speak to me, but actually I really enjoyed it. Loved the Wasp. Did not think that the two characters really had all that chemistry. Their romance wasn't really there per se. You know, in the classic cinematic romantic couplings that we've had in the history of cinema, I would rank their charisma, their chemistry, right up there with Anakin Skywalker and Padme Amidala.
Oh, come on, man. It was all not right, that bad. I feel it was better in the first one, but like it felt kind of disjointed just because there wasn't a lot of explanation as to what happened, you know, during Civil War and after Civil War. We just kind of got thrust into the situation where they don't like each other anymore.
Well, if I may, I mean, I think they work better as a team rather than a couple. You know what I mean? Like, I think in the third movie, or the third Ant-Man and the Wasp, or maybe just the Wasp, I think that'd be kind of a cool way to bookend that little franchise. But if they go that route, I don't see there's any need for them to be in a relationship.
I mean, is there ever really a need?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, if you look at most of the relationships that exist in the MCU, they're based out of relationships that existed in the comics. You know, there's a destiny aspect to those relationships. The exception being Bruce Banner and Natasha. The difference, though, is that those two characters had crazy chemistry together, that it was almost happening regardless of whether or not the writers intended for it to happen. It just worked out really well.
ScarJo has chemistry with everyone.
She does. She does have chemistry with everyone. I've seen her with you, and let me tell you, sparks were flying.
Oh, man, it was like a, you know, electricity factory exploded.
It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. And actually, her with the Rock, not the Rock, Dwayne, the Rock Johnson, but just literally a Rock. The chemistry was palpable.
Yeah. It was my pet Rock, actually. And, she actually had more chemistry with the pet Rock than she did with me, but like, wow, it was, you're out. It was definitely palpable.
Hey, ScarJo has it, man. But you're exactly right. And so here, I just don't see the chemistry. I don't see the need for this relationship to go beyond what it has been or what it currently is. And I kind of hope they don't really rest in that too much in the future. Now, that being said, I really did love both these characters. Even Paul Rudd, who most everybody likes except for me, I don't dislike him. I just don't like him. And, you know, he's a very passable, you know, sub Ant-Man. He's not Hank Pym. And even Hank Pym, I mean, like all my same criticisms from before, you know, the idea of doing this multi-generational approach, not essentially getting to see Hank Pym as the actual Ant-Man, focusing on Scott, who's a afterthought of a backup character to the Ant-Man, in my mind, it just rubbed me the wrong way. It didn't seem true to what had come before. And this movie also carries that on as well, especially in what they did with Bill Foster. I got to tell you, man, Bill Foster has been wasted by the MCU, and I'm really disappointed by that.
So, I mean, I kind of see what you're saying, but I think it makes sense in what they've given us. And I don't know. I like the Hank Pym passing the torch kind of thing. I like Michael Douglas in the role. Yeah, I like Lawrence Fishburne as Bill Foster.
Yeah,
I think that works. Like they're you know, the antagonism and stuff there, but I think you're right. Like I think it might have also been interesting to see a passage of the torch from, you know, Bill Foster to like a younger like Black Goliath or something.
That's
like
not
that.
Even what I'm saying, although I could see something like that, and maybe that's worth
and
exploring.
Maybe that's what Ghost was. Maybe.
Okay, so here's the deal, though. It's not just that. Bill Foster was a hero. He died in the, you know, in the comic book Civil War. Like he's a major player, and to kind of put him in this position, I'll give you this, Belt. You're right. In the way they set things up, having him as kind of an older dude who is in somewhat of a, you know, has kind of this grumpy old man history with Hank Pym. I can see that. That makes sense. I would argue that I found it disappointing because especially with Claire Temple rolling around on Netflix, I thought Bill Foster was going to actually be introduced on the Netflix series. For those that don't know, in the comic books, they were actually married. And so given the generational gap here, that's probably not the case of the MCU. she would have been a child while he was 30. it wasn't a thing. But even like I can get past that, right? Like they've set up this generational thing. I appreciate it is for what it is. What I can't get past is that they made Bill Foster essentially a villain. And he said very specifically to Ghost, you've done some things and I've looked the other way. You know what I mean? Like he was basically complicit in murder with everything that she was doing. And I don't know how I feel about that, man. Like, well, no, I do know how I feel about that. I don't like it. I do not like it.
I agree with you for a second, but I think my qualms with that were only in the beginning of the film. Towards the end of the film, where you kind of see where he really stands, is where I kind of understood. And I thought, okay, well, maybe this is where he's coming from. I think what it was is, like, he's talking specifically about her actions in S.H.I.E.L.D., where, you know, he or she acted as an operative. Right. Okay. And so, you know, I might not agree with murder, but, like, if a soldier goes and he kills a combatant, I'm going to, you know, I'll look the other way because, you know, that's what it is. It's warfare. Right. And so I think that's where he was coming from. He's saying, like, I don't agree with murder. I don't agree with the killing. But, like, you were working as an operative of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they trained you to do those things. And so I'm going to look the other way. I don't think it was more of like a I don't think he was sitting there like she was killing people. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's fine. Just kill random people.
But see, you know? I don't get the sense that he was talking about her actions at S.H.I.E.L.D. because that was 5-6 years ago at this point. I get the sense that it's about what's happened after the fact while she was in his care, you know, like they made it a little bit ambiguous, and I've only seen the movie once, so maybe I misunderstood that, but that's definitely the way that I took it.
Well, she was in his care pretty much right after her parents died.
Yeah, but I guess, like, literally since the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. because he talks about the fact that after the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, he was caring for her. She was his sole, like, he was solely responsible for her. And she didn't have the resources. They didn't have the resources to basically, I guess, heal her or treat her. And so they've been kind of, you know, doing what they can to save her. Also, I didn't understand the full logic behind how this is Hank's fault. Even after they explained it, I was like, yeah, that's not really on Hank. Like, the fact that he cut funding for this one dude, I mean, he didn't tell this dude to go off and do all these crazy science experiments. That's not on Hank.
Yeah, that was the thing that I think they needed to expound on a little bit, because there's the one throwaway line where Hank's like, you know, he's been lying to her. That guy was a traitor. And I think there should have been something in there to indicate that this dude was, if that's the route they're going to go. Because, like, right now, we don't know who's telling the truth, right? Because we had Bill Foster say one thing and we had Hank Pym say another thing. But who's telling the truth? Who's right? Which story is correct? So I think there should have been at least a little exposition, or maybe like a flashback or something like that, to show this character's true character, if you will, and for us to know as an audience whether or not this guy, you know, who to listen to, who's in the right. Because, yeah, it makes it hard to blame Hank Pym when you don't really know what this guy's motivations are, or, like, you know, why he's doing the things that he's doing. And so I do agree with you on that. It was kind of weird to blame that on Hank when you don't really know what's going on. Because it seems like Hank was in the right, saying, no, this guy was a traitor. He was stealing stuff, giving it to Hydra or whatever. Whereas Bill was like, no, he's a brilliant man who was disgraced by Hank because Hank has a problem with ego. So it's like, you know, which one is it? And they didn't answer that satisfactorily for me, I think.
Yeah. And that's really, overall, I feel like they wasted what is a really amazing character that they could have mined for a ton of story, and they really made him into a weird, like, morally gray, but not even, like, really fully gray. Just a weird character, and what a waste of a great character and a great actor to portray him too. Like, you know, like I said, I'll get over the whole generational thing, whatever, but I can't get over, like, that kind of corruption of his story. That really rubs me the wrong way. All right, that's out of the way. I feel like, to some extent, maybe there's some redemption that could happen if they wanted to tell a prequel. I would love an Ant-Man, Giant-Man, and the Wasp prequel of them going off and, you know, fighting in the 80s or whenever, but who knows what will end up happening there.
I will say this, though. As far as, like, de-aged Michelle Pfeiffer and de-aged Michael Douglas, de-aged Lawrence Fishburne was the worst.
I thought something was weird
with one of his eyes. It just looked weird to me. I don't know why.
I didn't catch that. I didn't catch that at all. I thought it was pretty good. The de-aging technology over there, I feel, is continually on point. Okay, so we do get introduced to Janet Van Dyne in this movie. Finally, the OG Wasp. You know, I was actually kind of hoping when it was announced that this movie was going to be Ant-Man and the Wasp, that it was actually going to be Scott pulling Janet out of the, you know, subatomic realm and her being the Wasp. And so the idea of, you know, kind of this new character, you know, new hero fighting with an old hero and that sort of deal. But instead, they maintained the fact that she aged, which is odd because we were told that in the subatomic space that space and time is irrelevant, and perhaps she was in some sort of stasis of sorts.
Well, she said it behaves differently. So, I mean, who knows? But yeah, right. That was
it just microwaves you until you come out with touch in, you're good.
ET powers is what I like to refer to them as. You have glowy fingers that heal people. Come on, that's ET.
And she did phone home.
She did. And she had a telepathic link.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is all ET. This Ant-Man and ET and the Wasp is what this movie should be called.
But yeah, no, she did a fantastic job. Even though she was only popping up near the end, of course, she was kind of the reason for the mission. It was a very self-contained mission from that standpoint. And, you know, I've seen a lot of reviews that have said this, and it's true. It's nice to kind of get a break from the world-ending problems. Yes. And just have more of a smaller story. And in fact, I was thinking about this, Belt. Without the Fantastic Four, they've kind of established the Ant-Man, Team Ant-Man, to be kind of the Fantastic Four right now. Like, this idea of, like, journey to the cosmic realm, to the microverse. Like, there's, you know, space age or sci-fi adventure nature to what we saw in this movie that is very reminiscent of the Fantastic Four.
I could see that, and I would love to see the adventures of this new Fantastic Four that we have here fighting tardigrades in, you know, the quantum realm. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. So, I mean, like, you know, he, one way or the other, really enjoyed the self-contained nature of it, like the hunt for Janet Van Dyne. I got it. I dig it. Hank Pym had a lot more to do this time around. It was actually nice to see him suit up, even if it wasn't necessarily in the Ant-Man suit, but to have him actually go in and get, you know, be part of the action, to reunite with his wife. It's a lot of really touching moments between the two of them and between Janet and Hope, and the kind of the mother-daughter connection is even, and maybe even especially when she is being channeled through Scott.
That was brilliant. Paul Rudd.
It was amazing.
Paul Rudd. Like, I thought Michelle Pfeiffer was in his head.
I know,
like,
right?
He did such a good job with that. Like, because it was complete, like, you know, it didn't feel like Paul Rudd. It felt like, I mean, it kind of did, but like it didn't, you know, he did such a good job sort of portraying that like motherly kind of thing. And yeah, that was a delight of the movie to me, was that scene where Paul Rudd is possessed, I guess you could say, by Michelle Pfeiffer's Wasp. Right. That was really, really good.
And props, by the way, to the team that made the decision, because you could see they were walking a line with that scene, and they could easily push it just a slight bit further to make that entire segment like hardcore comedy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just laugh out loud the entire time. Like it was very much walking the line. You could even tell with Paul Rudd's performance, you weren't quite sure if he was portraying it serious or silly. And they were able, I think, because of, I wouldn't actually put this on Paul Rudd. I think it's actually everybody else reacting around him. The way that they reacted to him is what sold it on her actually speaking through him, as opposed to, ha ha ha, Paul Rudd's being a lady. Like, no. It's the dynamic of the characters recognizing they are now speaking to someone they have not spoken to in, you know, a lifetime. And it's just a heartbreaking moment in its beauty. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, that one bit where you know, they're talking about, like, you know, to reduce the beam from like 3 to 7, and Hank's like, that's too narrow, it should be 2 to 8. And he's like, okay, we'll do 4 to 6. And she's like, our first fight in 30 years, and and it's over, just like that. Like that was so great. That was so great to me. Like, just the way Paul Rudd delivered the line, the way that Evangeline Lilly and Michael Douglas reacted to it was just, yeah, you're absolutely right. It was just that ensemble cast that you had right there did such a good job in that one little moment to really sell that and make it work.
Yeah, man. Okay, so we got Ghost as the villain here. We kind of already talked about it with Belle Foster, but like, her motives are weird. I feel like all of this could be settled with a pretty simple conversation of like, oh, you want to siphon her energy? Well, maybe that might be something we could do. Let's get her out and talk to her about it. You know what I mean? Like, their plans kind of align until the last bit of the movie. There's really no need for them to fight until the last bit of the movie.
Yes, I do agree. That was one weak point for me where it seemed like, and I understood Ghost's motivations, where she's like, I'm about to die. I need this is the way. We got to do it this way. This is how I'm going to live. I don't care about anything else. But it seems like there's a lot of points in time where, you know, Bill Foster could have been like, hey, Ghost, I know we're trying to, you know, pull the quantum energy out, but like, why don't we try to pull her out and then see if her experience in the quantum realm can help you fix yourself. There seemed like a lot of missed opportunities to kind of, you know, explain that and go that route. Instead, the route was, no, I'm going to like rip her to pieces with her, you know, this quantum energy device thing.
Exactly. See, that's the thing. Like, you're right. She's crazy because she's in like a ton of pain and has been pretty much her entire life. I get that. I can excuse a bad plan from a crazy person because they're crazy. However, Bill Foster should have been like, oh, hey, you know what? Actually, Janet, she's a friend of mine. We used to work together. I bet if we can get her out, we'll talk to her. She could probably help us figure this out. And if she's got this energy source, I'm sure she'll be willing to make this happen, as opposed to, no, just go out there, steal buildings and such. You know what I mean? Like, that's
yeah,
they ruined Bill Foster, man. They ruined Bill Foster with this movie. I'm mad about that.
I'm just glad that Bill Foster was in the movie. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't see that coming in. So I thought that was neat. You know, until I saw the trailer, I guess, where they were talking about that, I was like, is that going to be Bill Foster? Is that going to be Giant Man?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. But you know, I could see like a selling point to me for that whole idea would be like, maybe Bill Foster was scared because she's unstable, literally, both like mentally and physically. And so like, it's one of those things where she could be volatile in the situation and like hurt him or his family or something like that. And so I could see that, but they didn't convince me to sell that, you know?
Yeah. All right. So, but Ghost overall, I mean, a really cool reimagining of a classic character, you know, even kind of a deep cut with her father and everything else. I liked her power set, so to speak. It actually, I've been having a lot of internet connection problems at the house lately. And so whenever I play Sea of Thieves, it's been lagging like crazy. So the way that what she reacted to the world, I was like, they really should just call her lag because she's just experiencing life lag.
Yes, yes.
But I mean, like, you know, her parents are dead and she's just sitting there unable to interact with the world, a literal ghost. Yeah, I dig it. Works really well. I've seen a lot of criticism, Bell. People don't like the fact that she has existed working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and yet no one's ever heard of her. What are your thoughts on that criticism?
Well, when you have a 10-year-old movie franchise that is ever evolving, and because that's the thing, is you want her to be a sympathetic character. That's the whole crux of her character, is that it's to try to make her sympathetic, because otherwise it's like, just kill her, get rid of her, whatever, you know. But like, you know, she's a victim of tragedy and all these kind of things, and so you can't have her work for Hydra, because we don't see a lot of Hydra operatives, right? I mean, like, granted there's the TV show and like they have the Sokovian base and things like that, right? But like, it would make sense not to see that in Hydra. But like, I don't know, with S.H.I.E.L.D. it's one of those things where there's things that Cap didn't even know about, right? You know, there's different levels of clearance. There's like level 10 or whatever it was that in the second Captain America movie, where, you know, they had the whole automated gunships, they're gonna go kill people. So maybe she was one of those programs that, you know, I'm sure Fury is out of the picture now, so it's not like he really knows about those things, and it's not like he maybe felt it was a thing to tell Cap or the rest of the Avengers about, right? So I don't know. I mean, it's hard. Like, I get it and I understand, and I really don't like retcons and things like that unless they have a very, very, very solid explanation for it. But I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s a big organization, and this is a big franchise, and you know, it's one of those things where, sure, I can hand wave that away and I can be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand the criticism at all, personally. Like you said, S.H.I.E.L.D. is a big organization. People are acting like it's like five guys. Like, no. Like, they probably have tons of super assassins that we've yet to hear about. I would not be surprised by that in the slightest. And the argument of like, oh, why did they just call Winter Soldier when they could have gotten Ghost? It's like, well, because the dude knew Winter Soldier. He didn't know Ghost, or, you know, that might have been a division of S.H.I.E.L.D. he wasn't familiar with, or it was, and he just chose Winter Soldier because it was off the books, whereas she would be on the books. Like, there's just tons of different things. And on top of that, there's probably three or four other operatives or, you know, ex-SHIELD experiments that we'll probably learn about over the next 10 to 20 years. And they will also have been options. So, you know, it's just who chose what, when, and where. She could have been off killing people while Winter Soldier was off killing people. And they were just multitasking. It's a big company. Well, organization. They could do that if they wanted to. So anyway, I never understood that criticism, but I've seen it so repetitiously, I felt like we probably should address it. So Scott starts up the old startup scene, which is something that speaks to both of our experiences with the ex-con consulting. What'd you think of Louise and team running their own startup?
So it was pretty funny, but like I didn't pick up on ex-con. Like I was thinking ex-com, like C-O-M, and then like I was like ex-con. They're all ex-con. Yeah, I felt really dumb once that really hit. But I thought it was great. Like I thought that was a really neat little way to include them and bring them back into the thing. And it was also like a nice opportunity to have one of those, you know, Michael Pena, Luis, crazy diatribes that he had in the first movie, which were so successful, and you know, they brought it in this one. I thought they did a really good job. It didn't feel forced. It felt kind of like, you know, it was a nice little injection there, like it, because that was a real good bit. It was a real good gag, and I thought this one was also very well done. I loved Kurt, I think it was, the Russian guy with the Babadook.
Oh man.
Just reminded me of, like, was it John Wick? They talk about the same thing and he's like singing the song when the ghost comes in and steals the thing. Yeah, I thought they did a great job. I thought it was wonderful. I like those characters. I like that they got to you know, play around with these, you know, new toys and stuff that they had in the new movie. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, and you know, the whole you know, the rapid telling of the backstory thing, like, they could have easily gone in the direction that most sequels do, which is like something that worked well in the first time, like the first time around, like do it to death the second time around. But yeah, here they did a little bit more sparingly and it worked really well. I dug it, man. I also dug the fact that Scott, during his home arrest, has been, you know, gliding around creating these elaborate games for him to play with his daughter whenever she comes in. As a father who has also created several elaborate games without that much time, I can only imagine what I would do under house arrest. So really, really loved that. So yeah, good touch. Yeah. And the ex-con security did allow for the introduction of this Southern dude villain guy. I guess he technically was selling parts to Janet. He seemed a little, I don't want to say pointless, because, I mean, he definitely served the plot to some extent, but he just, it was a weird, I don't know.
Sonny Birch?
Yeah, kind of a weird villain to be involved,
yeah,
right?
Well, it was interesting to see him kind of as this, you know, I guess like tertiary kind of villain, I guess secondary mainly, but, yeah, you know, they had to explain how Hank and Hope were getting all these things, and so he made that explanation work, and it was also a nice introduction to Ghost when they had that first meeting. I mean, I don't know. It kind of worked for me because, you know, he had the connection with the FBI, which is how they sort of found everything, and I don't know. Like, I wonder if we're going to see more of him in future Ant-Man films. I don't know. But it worked for me in the way that, like, you know, there needed to be some sort of way where, you know, we got to explain how, you know, Hope and Hank have been on the run, how they've been getting all this technology to do all this stuff that they've been doing. And I don't know. It made for a pretty interesting chase scene, though, at the end of the movie. So I think it worked. It was, I didn't really pick up on the Southern accent thing. Like, it seemed, I don't know, his Southern accent was kind of bad. Yeah, all in all, I think that worked.
And just like that, Bell has disappeared. Did he shrink down to the quantum realm, or did he get snapped away by Thanos? There's still so much more I wanted to talk about in this episode, but as I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm on location, although I don't think it's me. I honestly think that we've just been having some technical issues on Bell's end tonight, so I don't know what might be going crazy, but I will say this. Overall, I really enjoyed Ant-Man. I know that Bell did as well. You know, we'll be sure to post out on Facebook and Twitter what our official scoring was. But for me, I kind of rank this, I think maybe a 3 I mean, I try to steer clear from doing the points, the decimal points and everything. But if I did do the decimal points, I'd do 3.5. I really, I enjoyed it. I thought it was much better than the first Ant-Man. There's just a lot that this movie did that I'm just not satisfied with. And it's more from like a personal level, not from a film level. As a movie, it's a fairly solid movie, even though it does have a lot of weak points in the plot line and everything else. It's enjoyable. You can eat popcorn to it. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. It's passing. It's not the worst Marvel movie. It's not the best Marvel movie. It's just a fine Marvel movie. And, again, for me, it's better than the original Ant-Man. But I'm really upset with what they did with Bill Foster. I do think that the villain, my issues with the villain really have to do with Bill Foster and the fact that they made him complicit in everything, negative that she was doing and what her machinations were. But some really cool special effects. The Wasp was insane. Like the way that they used her shrinking power, especially with the flying, really, really made for some amazing action sequences. The kitchen sequence in particular really sticks out to me. And, just a lot of really good fun time, wacky, blowing things up and shrinking them down. So overall, I'm going to say 3.5. That's what I'll say. And we'll find out Bells by checking out on Twitter. In fact, actually, the best way to check him out is by going on Twitter at Ring That Bell and just asking him, hey, Bell, what did you think? Ant-Man, 4 out of 5. Where did it fall for you? And I'm sure he is more than happy to share that with us all. We'll also post it out to the Facebook page at facebook.com/panel to screen, where Woo has been holding it down. Now say it with me now. Can we get it, Woo? Woo? Oh, that was on you. And if you did it, that's for Woo. So again, facebook.com/panel to screen to check out all of the wonderful latest and greatest things going on there. You can also follow me. I'm at The Real Beau York. I spell my name B-E-A-U. And as a reminder, Bell spells his B-E-A-L-L. We make it complicated because that's the way our parents made us. And until next time, guys. Ants.